Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Malcolm is with us live via telephone for the weekly update. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. I hope everybody had a great Pesach and, you know, coming back to the reality, which is not as beautiful as we would have hoped.
Tell you one thing, the Pesach Seder or Seders, depending on where you are, were certainly more meaningful this year, I believe, than an average year, because we are experiencing right now a lot of what the Baal Haggadah spoke to us about through the Haggadah in Jewish history, obviously starting in Egypt, but of course there are references constantly to what has happened in subsequent generations, including our own, Mr. Honlein. Yes, the Haggadah that we read is applicable to today.
More than applicable. I think every single sentence, every paragraph has a message that is of contemporary significance. I've cited before, you know, that if you read the Megillah just as telling a story of something that happened, you know, thousands of years ago and not of its contemporary importance, then you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. I think the same thing is true of the Haggadah. If you don't listen to the messages, every paragraph has a contemporary message or something that can be spiritually uplifting at this difficult time, that then you haven't really understood it. And I agree with you. I think people, you know, celebrated Pesach in a new way, and families coming together. I hear many people who didn't, you know, commemorate the holidays in the past or for years came back to their families to do it this year. And I think it's a reflection of the sense that people have of the tenuousness of this moment, the dangers that are lurking, that we have talked about for 15 years on this show. It's not something that just popped out of nowhere. It's been developing, and unfortunately, people didn't heed the warning signs.
Yeah, well, on the first topic, I was amazed, surprised, pleasantly surprised at some of the people and families that I heard that not only mentioned and spoke about the hostages during the Seder, but actually textually through a tefillah that was written by Rabbi Lau, actually included that in their Seder. And that to me was quite significant. On the other topic, it's funny, you stole my thunder a drop, because that's how I was going to start this conversation. This doesn't happen overnight. By the way, it's much more than 15 years. I hate to tell you, at this point, it's really approaching 35 years, if you think about it, that you have been issuing these warnings, telling us what this country, believe it or not, could turn into. After all, we saw what happened in Europe and other places on this globe. And the scary part is that, you know, you can't, and we know this, of course, from our own, from history, you can't go ahead and have an effective movement that we are now witnessing on tens of college campuses in over 20 states in this country. You can't have a movement without some type of influence on the average, I don't know, college student or average citizen, because I don't know how many of them are really students, without having a real effect on them and getting them to, you know, to get with the program, so to speak. So it's not just that this is a, you know, campus activity or something that, you know, college students, you know, are using as an opportunity to protest and demonstrate. They are having, it seems, a tremendous effect on average citizens, especially the young ones in this country. Do you feel the same way that I feel observing this?
Well, I've come to reshape my family a bit, that there's a possibility here that there will be a backlash to this, that it reflects a couple of things. One is the ignorance of young people and older people who have no clue about what really is the Gaza is about, where it is, who the players are. Two, I think to see that this is an anti-American, not just anti-Jewish campaign, that the Jews are the first targets, just like in Israel, but it's really America and Iran and others who are sponsors of this, and I'll mention that in a minute, seek to destabilize our system, our economic system, et cetera, and that Israel is an obstacle to their designs in the region, Second, we should still see that the numbers are still relatively small that are participating, much larger than they should be. But when you look at the overall numbers in the country, and then you look at how many of them are not from the campus, but are paid agitators, or, you know, just people who are hired, that the almost half of those arrested in New York have nothing to do with the campuses where they were arrested. The presence here of funding from outside, both domestic and foreign funding, and I invest a lot of time and effort in the, together with the colleagues in looking, trying to seek out the foreign funding, which Chinese or Qatari or Turkish or Iranian, and likely all of them in one way or another, but the Chinese in a very big way, I think, will be shown to have put money into this. And even if just taking the domestic money, and the fact that students are susceptible to these appeals, I think that that will be branded on this generation for a long time, even if they, you know, many of them will outgrow this particular phase. But, you know, the very fact that they can yell, the Jews are not welcome here, that and much stronger messages, and the river to the sea, you know, annihilate a Jew, any Jew you see. These are reflect much deeper a malaise in society that has developed over time, and we saw the signs earlier on, as you noted. But when you have to take each aspect of this, of what is going on the campus, to me, the faculty has finally been exposed. You saw them line up yesterday at Fordham College, a Catholic institution. They lined up against the police, and it was faculty members locking arms. And in many other places, they went at Columbia and gave classes in the tents, in the encampments. They dismissed classes. Poured and came to the sites and praised them, and even with the nature of the things that were being said, were dismissive and came out against their own administrations and against the police. So many things that we have to come to grips with, and we have to understand. But again, the numbers are still relatively small, and there are unfortunately about 150 campuses, maybe 200, where things have taken place, but many of them not significant. Well, Columbia became the poster child for this, and the university's failure to act for so long, and the capitulation, if it's true that Rutgers agreed to 8 of the 10 points that were demanded of them, that the University of Minnesota has agreed to review it, the association with Israel. These are really troubling things.
Yeah, and by the way, that's why, you know, you cite the small numbers, and we're always warned, by the way, to never minimize this quote-unquote small numbers. But this army that we see, taking over the campuses and behaving in the violent manner that they are, and condemning the Jews and not allowing Jews in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they have a lot of accomplices. I mean, as you just indicated, if Rutgers, University of Minnesota, faculty members nationwide, if they're aboard this this mission, you know, if they're on this ship and sailing with them, then they have a much larger crowd than we're giving them credit for. It's not just those who are sitting in tents, you know, outside of main buildings of campuses.
Right. And I was very disturbed to see the unions, the May 1st demonstration, Foley Square. But again, you know, what it was, 2,000 people, they always have a May Day commemoration there, so they took advantage of it. But you see the product of intersectionality. You see but on the other hand, you saw Congress voted 300 and something to 91, and we'll discuss that, I'm sure, for the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, and the overwhelming sentiment that you hear in other places. Many corporations are reviewing their hiring practices, and, you know, woke culture maybe is being exposed. The problem is it's always on our backs.
Yeah. And that's a disturbing thing. You know, if it's an anti-war protest is one thing. And, you know, and let the kids do what they feel they need to do, as we've seen before in American history. But the fact that it's turned into such virulent anti-Semitism, and that the acts, the violence, the blocking, the condemning, the beating, I mean, you know, these things are what makes us disturbing. If not for our police forces, I mean, this is an obvious statement, but if not for them, if we didn't have, you know, if we still didn't have state protection, you know, at the ready, I don't know where this would go. I mean, we'd be talking, I hate to say, we'd be talking about pogroms in the streets, the way these hoodlums are taking over campuses and intimidating Jews. So
if you ask some of the students, I think that it wasn't far, not quite a pogrom, but certainly very threatening, very violent atmosphere. The kids don't come into the campus. That the Hillel, they can't, in Columbia, they can't study in the library starting today, and they are in the Hillel, and they say in the Hillel, every inch, square inch is taken by students, and it's not a grand atmosphere as opposed to, you know, to a quiet library where they would study, and many went home to prepare for their finals, and also because they feel unsafe on the campus, and this is not a way.
Yeah. And then on top of that, a pretty weak response from Washington. I mean, you know, we need real leadership now. And we'll talk about Jewish leadership in a minute. We need real leadership now. I'm sure you saw it, as the whole world has now. I didn't think the president came out nearly strongly enough yesterday. And by the way, when someone asks him, you know, should we include the National Guard in this? I don't know how you give a definitive no. I think you at least have to remind the agitators that that possibility is an actual real possibility. And he goes ahead and he plays that hand, you know, in a terrible way, in a flippant off-the-cuff comment. I mean, we're not getting, you know, the leadership nationally that we need. We are getting leadership from fraternity members who feel it's important to tear down Palestinian flags and replace it with an American flag. Those are the heroes of today. But real leadership, we're not getting at all.
Well, first of all, on the president's comments, the on the way out, they yelled a question to him about the National Guard. There was nothing else he would say, especially given their play to that.
Didn't have to say anything. But
right. He could have just kept walking. Right. But he also then was asked whether this would change the policy in the Middle East, and he said no. So that was, you know, a little bit better. But I agree about his remarks that each time it has to be qualified. Rather than just focusing on anti-Semitism, you know, he has to throw in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab thing. There's no anti-Palestinian demonstrations taking place if it weren't for this stimulation. The anti-Semitic stuff hasn't gone on for a long time. Jewish kids have been, you know, couldn't wear their yarmulkes. They wore baseball caps. And anyone who rides a subway yarmulke can tell you what can... and the fear that they have, that it's not comparable to others, and you know, to throw in as the Secretary of State did when he cited on the Eid the Arab population or Muslim populations under siege, and he said the Muslims in the people in Gaza and the West Bank, really? Then the Uyghurs down the and the reference to Syria, where hundreds of thousands were killed, where you see real genocide, where the Uyghurs, a million, you know, incarcerated by the Rwanda in Burma. And all of the populations, we have legitimate policies of discrimination. And yet the constant criticism of Israel in terms of the food, look how many, 250,000 trucks went in. Well, that's not discrimination. That's not because they're going hungry. Look at the pictures yesterday circulated of the trucks commandeered by Hamas, and they shot at people who approached the Palestinians, who approached the trucks to food off, because they steal it, they supply their people, and then they sell it in the markets, and the people don't get it. And they have to move very carefully, slowly, because, not because Israel's holding them up, but the people are in the streets there trying to get to stuff. The building of the pier, the fact that the Hamas shot rockets at the piers, at the people working destruction. Where was that reported widely? Where's the condemnation? And that Israeli troops are going to have to guarantee the security, and then others will accompany the trucks, and that it has opened up. Yesterday, Blinken, Secretary Blinken, you know, acknowledged Israel has made important moves. Israel was making moves all the time. This is not a policy to deny food or deny water. They took the water pipes to make rockets. They tore up the electricity that was being supplied to Gaza from Israel. And then they come, you know, it's like a child who kills his parents and goes to court as an orphan and asking for mercy. Look at how the senior leaders of Hamas in Gaza, not just Qatar, live. And you'll understand. Think of the billions invested in infrastructure that we're still uncovering. They're still uncovering tunnels and things that they didn't know about, let alone huge caches of weapons and other things. It's such a total a generation now, and this is only the beginning. When we see how AI, artificial intelligence, and the internet can be secundered, that you can't even believe the things that you yourself are saying because you hear your picture, and it's not you, things you said or did. And we are seeing how the lies can be perpetuated, and, you know, so much so that they didn't, kids at Columbia, the intelligent, supposedly generation, not talking about the outsiders, that the false narrative, what happened on October 7th, and that the Holocaust didn't take place.
Yeah, a PhD doesn't give you common sense. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio around the world on the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and, of course, on the beloved NSN app. All right, so Jewish leadership response. First of all, kudos, and I said this on Wednesday. You know, it was a holiday. Even those who aren't necessarily ritually observant, it was a holiday, and there was a lot of attention taken away. If you're a member of the Jewish community, and still so many members of our youth across the country made it a point to get to the rallies, to demonstrate against the demonstrators, to get in their face, frankly. And I'm not here to debate whether we should be physically starting up with them or not. I'm just saying that I was proud to see that, frankly. But now everyone's got a little bit more time, and the Jewish establishment and its leadership has an opportunity to, you know, set in motion whatever they feel is the best approach to this. What is the best approach to this? I know we have to praise the police forces, and I know we have to deal with our political officials, government officials, etc. That's understood. But does there need to be a nationwide take-it-to-the-streets effort that's, in fact, organized and led by the established Jewish leadership in this country?
So you presented some of the most critical debates and issues that we face. And I know there are many people who are critical of what they feel that they should be doing, is doing. The fact is that you saw in L.A. the counter demonstration, but then it got violent and people got hurt. I think that the mobilizing public opinion, and we had successes this week, the fact that you had the vote in the House on the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, that you have the Student Protection Act coming up. There were meetings with the head of the Department of Justice, Department of Education this week. There were meetings with State Department. There were other meetings that are going on all the time, trying to press the agenda. We see lawsuits being filed all over the country. We have mobilizations of all kinds that don't necessarily get the headlines. Maybe better not to get the headlines until they're sure, but are putting universities on notice that we see, you know, that they will be sued, that they will be held accountable. I think, you know, when lawfare started in my office many years ago, people didn't understand why this was necessary. And the truth is that it's our strongest lever in many cases against the university administration that feels that they are immune or protected or distant and can allow things to go on. And all of a sudden, they're facing a judge with overwhelming evidence that they discriminated or their policies were discriminatory. They didn't do stuff to protect Jewish students, even though they were put on notice. And parents who have kids in these universities should withhold tuition, should hold them accountable for the dangerous situation and for the... For them, you know, that students couldn't get their tefillin at the Hillel on a Sunday morning, and that the fact that they weren't able to go to classes and had to, you know, live in this hostile atmosphere and threatening atmosphere. So there are many things going on. Believe me, there are meetings constantly and looking at what are the options, what are the best ways to do this, you know, going to the streets and is not going to change anything. Meeting with the university presidents, donors withholding their contributions for the first time in very serious ways. That makes a difference when alumni and supporters, you know, tell the president. Universities and no more until you're out or until we see the actions that are necessary to be taken. So those things are happening. That the mayor has made some very powerful remarks, but it was late in coming too. Right. And that our national and local officials have to be held to account. And, you know, elections come up periodically and they want support. They got to know there is a price to pay for it. We can't allow this to continue. This is a cancer that will continue to We saw it in Europe, and when you close one eye to it, or let alone both eyes, as is often the case, it's not going away. It's like a child, a young child who tries to get away from their dreams, like closing their eyes or not facing something that scares them.
Yeah.
This is not going away.
Robert Kraft's name is synonymous with Colombia. The problem is the Qataris have more money than Robert Kraft, frankly, but it's still, as you said, symbolically and practically good to see someone like himself make the public statements and take the action that he did. By the way, and if I'm not mistaken, you're an Ivy Leaguer. When Penn, MIT, and Harvard were on the chopping block, so to speak, in Congress, we didn't see demonstrations of this sort and this violent and this large. And then, of course, Columbia is being grilled in Congress, and then this is the aftermath. I mean, is Columbia just literally the collegiate and university leader when it comes to demonstrations and protests? I mean, is it just obvious that whatever they do, the rest of the academic country follows?
Well, for one thing, it's in New York, which is the seat of the media. And you saw that NYU got attention this week. Right. And, you know, many years ago already, I took the conference of presidents and we held our regular meeting, a general meeting of all of our leadership at NYU.
Wow.
And I'm talking about years ago, six, seven, maybe more years ago, because nobody understood how bad the situation is. And I had students come and tell what was going on, what they experienced. Not talk about on the quad, in the classroom to a professor, them already then. And I will tell you, at the end of the meeting, many of the presidents were crying. They had tears in their eyes. They could not believe what they had just heard and that this was going on. We met, you know, afterwards with the leadership of Columbia at NYU. But a Jewish professor, a professor even of Jewish studies, challenged me and for a long time was writing me, true, you know, we get more religious students than NYU. We get this, we get that. Denying completely that it exists. And I said, but listen, we had the kids there themselves. The kids from 20 universities recently to Washington, and I had the privilege to be with them when we sat with senators and congressmen, and they were sitting there open mouthed, and I could, sitting next to them, I heard them say, I can't believe this, I can't believe this, I didn't notice what's going on. And say, we're so sorry, we didn't know. And that's why you saw the voting and many bills coming up and demands for accountability on this. And it can't be the showmanship. It can't be platitudinous statements by the president or by the Department of Education. You know, there's a plan a year ago, the president announced every division of government is supposed to come up with a plan on how it will fight anti-Semitism. Now it's a year they're supposed to have all of those things, those plans in place and report on them. I want to see what really has been done. We've got to know what people are doing, not just saying. And we have to hold to account our elected officials. I went to a meeting at the Department of Education. I was shocked by what they were saying. I mean, just total incompetence and you know, mouthing sympathy, but doing nothing. And the Congress is going to hold, and many members of Congress finally are moving around. And yet, Jerry Nadler voted against the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act under the free speech argument. And 91 others joined him, 90 others joined him, but 300 plus voted for it. And that's the important thing. And we should acknowledge who they were, what they did, and thank them. And let the others know how we feel that they won't adopt the IRA definition because the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of which gives you a standard by which to measure people. It gives examples that shows that anti-Zionism and all those who argued, Nahum, as you know, oh, it's not anti-Zionism. You can't say it's anti-Semitism, anti-Israel is not anti. Look at what they're saying. It's clearly anti-Semitic.
Yeah. And wait, we have, if New York is the media capital of the world, and it is, as you just pointed out, we have more coming up because I think the chancellor of the New York City public school system is going to be in Washington soon to answer the same type of questions, and God knows what that's going to bring.
But we know the high schools here have been infiltrated. They've been infected.
Yeah, and physical confrontations. And physical confrontations for faculty and students.
Teachers backing it and saying it. And as I said, the unions coming out now, some of them in the teachers groups and others, and making life teachers very difficult. And thank God there are organizations that are forming, and parents who have kids in public schools should join, support them. Don't be alone. You know, we have to hold account. Our tax dollars are paying for this.
Yeah. Well, as a Holocaust survivor said to me right before Pesach, this is reminiscent to her of Europe in the early 1930s, in the late 1930s. And the only difference is that we now have a state of Israel. And I would add to that, the difference at the moment is that, thank God, the state here and its police forces are still have an interest in protecting us. All right, so Prime Minister Netanyahu says he will invade Rafah with or without a ceasefire deal. I mean, the weakness that Israel is now, you know, of how they're being perceived now is obvious. Hamas ran to make a deal in November, and over 100 hostages were released because they were so afraid of what Israel might do. And it's obvious that they were fearful of Israel's strength. And now it seems like all these empty words coming out of Jerusalem really have no effect on Hamas at all. And I think that that's the reason they're walking away from every deal. You think he's being accurate when he says, the prime minister, that he'll invade Rafah with or without a ceasefire deal?
Well, first, I just want to say in our last discussion, the fact that Yom HaShoah is coming up now, and to remind us, I remember on the show I said many times that teachers in schools should bring Holocaust survivors and ask them what they see, what they smell, and what they see, because all of them, even years ago, would say to me, I see it, I'm beginning to see the same thing, and listening to at least those who lived through it, who they are the early warning system for us. Okay, on the this issue, I don't know what Netanyahu's final word will be. If they get a deal and they can get the surviving hostages, and I use that term advisedly because we don't know how many are alive. We found another one from Be'eri that was in fact killed just yesterday, not killed yesterday, but the confirmation of the fact that he had been killed and that they're holding his body. I don't know. I think it's a statement perhaps of Hamas weakness, that their fear of what will happen if Israel goes into Rafah, that they're trying to force it so that the Rafah operation doesn't take place. And I think also because they know they can't deliver on a lot of the promises, perhaps, about the hostages, and giving up the hostages for Sinwar in particular, who's surrounded by them, means that he becomes much more vulnerable. Even the ceasefire is not meant to be forever. It's meant to be for a defined period. He is demanding that the war be over completely, and Israel has said that's not going to happen. You have to be careful how you interpret the negotiations. Hamas certainly has been dealt a body blow, but they feel that maybe they're getting more international support. The fact that you have cases at the ICC and ICJ today, Turkey announced that it not only is cutting off all commercial imports and exports to Israel, but is joining South Africa in the case at the International Court of Justice. Colombia said that they would, as they broke diplomatic relations with Israel. Others have threatened it. The International Criminal Court case, which nobody knows and understands, but believe me, is very dangerous. It could put in jeopardy not just the Prime Minister and the Minister in charge of the Defense Minister and the head of the IDF, but also every officer could be subject to sanctions. And Khan is coming here, the head of the prosecutor at the International criminal court. Remember that these were created in the wake of the Holocaust. These institutions were established, and now it is being applied in ridiculous fashion to Israel. But it's not without significance, and people, you know, this is not shmoom stuff. This can be this can have real practical consequences. I know in Israel they're very concerned about it. But I think Hamas, you know, is on its hind legs, that Israel is continuing. There are clashes going on. They still are eliminating terrorists. But what the prime minister will do ultimately, what the United States has threatened or cajoled or offered, we don't know in the private conversations. We'll have to see what happens in the next days.
What did you think of President Biden's proposal to bring people from Gaza to the United States?
We don't have enough problems on the southern border to exacerbate the problem by bringing people here.
My friends in Judea and Samaria love the idea, by the way.
Really? Until they start organizing and you bring, we don't have enough anti-Israel elements here. But, you know, there are plenty of other places. Why don't they send them to the Arab countries? Why don't they send them to Africa? Because none of them will take them. Not one. Why doesn't Egypt take? Why doesn't Jordan take? Why don't you spread them out in the Gulf? There's plenty of desert and there's plenty of land and they have plenty of money. None of them want them because they've been disloyal to them. They feel threatened by them. And they're the ones encouraging Israel to go into Rafah and to finish the job.
And what did you think of the Iranians offering scholarships to those students on the American college campuses who want to transfer to Tehran University?
I think it's a great idea. I think all of those who participated in the thing should absolutely go. I think that you know, the gay alliances and stuff, let them go to see what when they get thrown off a roof in Iran, when they see the tolerance of Iran, the let them go to Gaza and see what life really is like for the Gazans, and see how long they would have this idealistic vision of you know, from the river to the sea. And they want to see this spread, that everybody in the region should be under these dictators, and you know, that they look to Iran, they look to these others, and only criticize America and the West. Europe, we see they can't respond. The demographics are such that the trend is very clear, and whether it takes a decade or two decades, all of the progress over the progression over these years will create a new political realities. And I think the fact that no Arab country has offered to resettle any of the people, take that just the people from Rafah and let them go into the Sinai Desert for temporary. Israel offered to build housing, and the international community could build housing, and so nobody would be jeopardized. But Egypt doesn't want them, and I don't blame them. And they've been a fifth column for them. And I think this is, you know, the world should look at this reality. And you know, many of the people in Gaza don't support Hamas. You've seen demonstrations even against Hamas, which is a courageous thing to do. But the what worries me also is how this is spreading in Yehuda and Shomron in the West Bank. You see the daily raids against the terrorists, that thank God the Israeli army intelligence has been amazing in this regard, that they found all the factories and prevented what could have been another front. But in Israel.
Yeah. Well, the scary thing is you see how easily the youth and others, but the youth certainly in this country, could be indoctrinated relatively quickly, I think. I mean, I know that the college campuses have been a problem for quite a while, but I mean, these are young kids. And, you know, you wonder about how things were in Germany and other places in Europe, et cetera, in our history. And it doesn't take a long time for things to turn. And these days, with the speed of things, this is going relatively quickly. And
all the fake information and false news, that's why they have to listen to you all week. That's why they have to go to sources they can trust, that you can't believe anything. Even if you read it, you see it. We see how many false reports and people's voices adapted to make it look authentic, and it isn't. So don't trust anything,
Malcolm,
until you check it.
Malcolm, is the genie out of the bottle? Is this country all going to be Dearborn in 10 years?
No, not yet, But if we have this unfettered immigration, if we have, you know, and we should welcome foreigners and, you know, have some tests, but just have an open border where millions and millions of people have come across, including Muslims, including people from Iran, including people from other countries. And I've spoken to presidents in South America who talk about how people come to their countries, you know, apply for passports there, and they get it relatively easily. And then they come here as Hispanics when they're really coming from Africa, and they can be coming from Arab Muslim countries at least and get entree into the United States. And, you know, I know people think it's conspiratorial to talk about sleeper cells in this country, but it's true. And when the foreign, when the funding situation comes out, you find it's not just Arabs, that China has had an organized effort, that other countries have had organized efforts here in the United States. Certainly Qatar's billions and billions poured into our universities at a price. And now we're seeing the price we have to pay for it.
Malcolm, have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll speak again next week, please God.
And people should not be, don't be pessimistic. Don't be turned down. Be energized. Look at your children. Tell them that you're committed to their safety, that we will be more active, that we will do more. We will make our voices heard. You will let elected officials who do the right thing know that we're with them, to let those who are, do not, that they will pay a price for it.
Holiday is over, folks. It's time to act. Simple as that. Time to act now. Thank you, Malcolm. JM in the AM, Friday morning, Erev Shabbos, candle lighting time at 7:34 in New York. Again, at 7:34 in New York.